Nice. So, okay then. Right, we're off. So just off we go.
Yeah, my name's Graham. I run a company called Chiselwitz Bespoke Furniture. I've been self-employed since 1986. I'm a cabinet maker by trade. I've been involved in the joinery side and buildings and just about all my life. But now is my time and to produce what I love producing, which is bespoke furniture. Born and bred in Sheffield. I'm a musician by night.
Now that's an interesting one. Where are we at the moment?
Where are we?
Yeah.
I do. Me and my wife go out as a duet. Call them Envision.
Envision. N as in November.
N.
Yeah.
E N Vision.
Envision. Right. Okay.
We go out as a duet. She does stuff on her own. I do stuff on my own. I've recently just finished with a band what we've been in for the last 8 years, which were a bit sad, but we move on with things, don't we?
No, I do. It's just what I was thinking about, where we are, as in Kelham Island, at the moment. Isn't there a... Did you play down at the...
Yellow Arch.
And the
Toolmakers.
Yeah. What's the other one down at the other pub?
Forest Pub. I played a lot of venues in Sheffield.
Right. Right. Karen.
Hiya.
we sat in the van again.
Right, so I'm Karen, and my business is Steel City Properties. So I'm involved in the buy-to-let and the HMO side of the business. I've got my own buy-to-let portfolio because I'm massive and very passionate about property and being into buy-to-let, because I'm basically wanting to be earning passive income so that I'm able to do whatever I want, really, ideally. So because I've got such experience and knowledge, etc., in the buy-to-let and the HMO market, investors come to me to be able to hands-free, or we call it an armchair experience. Investors come to me to either start or to further build on their buy-to-let portfolios or their HMO. I specifically work in Sheffield, because Sheffield's an amazing city. And property strategy-wise, for me, it fills every single need that an investor could possibly want.
What's HMO?
HMO, House of Multiple Occupancy.
Ah, yeah.
So they're becoming quite popular at the moment. Obviously, we've got massive housing shortage. One, because there's not enough properties to go around everybody. Two, property for when you're starting on the ladder now is so expensive that people really struggle to even sometimes rent a whole house to themselves.
Yeah.
So it just makes it for a cheaper way.
So it's not just students then?
No.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. But
absolutely, especially in Sheffield, with having two universities.
Yeah.
That is a massive market, and quite a lot of the investors want to come into that.
Yeah.
It's very, very popular. So it can be for students primarily, but a lot of professionals want it now.
Here's a question that I'm just interested in, because I lived in Sheffield. You're not from Sheffield?
I've been not all my life. No. My dad was in the RAF, so I've sort of travelled all over.
Oh, right.
All over England, and sort of a little bit over the world as well. Yeah. So, hence I haven't got the lovely Sheffield accent that Graham's got.
Great, yeah.
I've picked up accents from all over the place, from where I've lived, but I'm absolutely settled in Sheffield.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I'm the same. I mean, I was a student here, which is why I was getting at it. But I just think about the idea of multiple occupancy and shared ownership.
Mm.
You know, you don't have to be a student. Why don't we have homesteads or family ownership rather than going out and aspiring to have your own house, which is usually very expensive.
Absolutely,
So is there we were talking about this a while ago, weren't we, about the idea where you're buying the houses.
Yes.
Like Tinsley, is that right?
Don't buy in Tinsley. Don't buy in Tinsley as a rule. There's other pockets of Sheffield that work a lot better.
Right.
Because a lot of investors, I'd say the majority of my investors, are more interested in their gross yield. And what I mean by gross yield is generally what they get put into their bank account every month.
Right.
So it's kind of a top-up of their wages.
So really passive income in that sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. What's important to them. And they also go along and get equity, because Sheffield property market at the moment, the prices are starting to really, really rise.
Right.
So quite a lot of them are in it for more equity side.
I'm going to lob a few things in here about ownership and stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, if equity... I mean, let's say from a load of students, you know, they've got careers ahead of them and all that sort of stuff, but they need a base.
Yes.
Could they be potentially an investor in the property?
Absolutely.
Collectively?
Absolutely.
Right, because, I mean, you know, if I was a student, you know, you've got the opportunity to buy a little share in a house or something.
Mm.
So you do that as well, or that would be part of...
I would certainly be able to go along and give recommendations on how to do that, where to do that, I'm more than happy in trying to go along and educate people, because a lot of people feel that they can't get into property because it's just so expensive.
Yeah.
Well, actually... that's not necessarily the case. I spent a phenomenal amount of time and money on training, so kind of all different kinds of strategies that Joe Public, as a rule, don't actually know or don't understand. So I've spent a lot of time and a lot of money in that. So sort of my knowledge and my experience, if I'm able to try and help people, then I'm absolutely wanting to do that.
Specialising in Sheffield, then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Okay. It's just, you know, the housing stock. I don't know, whereabouts do you live, Graham?
Shire Green,
right. Yeah. Okay, well, these are interesting places. It's you know, spectacular vista.
Yeah.
You know, these places, you know, the other one I was quite taken by was Norfolk Park.
Mm.
You know, when you get these views out to the hills and all that sort of stuff. You know, Sheffield has got so many different appeals.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying investors... But what isn't there in Sheffield that an investor can't fulfil?
Right. Okay. It's interesting. I don't know about you, Graham, but I'm hearing moneyed people wanting to buy out cheap houses.
No, not necessarily.
Right. So that's when you say, you know, like in investing, like, I've got a load of cash and I want to sort of make it work, for example.
And I think that's sort of the vision that a lot of people have. I'm going to need a lot of money, and I need to have a big wad of cash to actually be able to get into property. It's not always the case.
So we need to be creative. It's about
absolutely,
getting in.
Absolutely,
so,
yes.
So we do, if we are moving in, you know, to changing directions, or I mean, I quite like the idea of, you know, different careers or things moving on and changing, you know, flux.
Yeah.
Not everybody likes, but maybe want a bit more stability. But maybe a part ownership, you know. Other thing, I mean, you imagine pitfalls, I guess, when people fall out, but
we call that, in the property world, call that JVing. So we're joint venturing.
Oh, right, okay.
So let's say, for example, Martin, you had 10,000, I had 10,000, and Graham, you had 10,000. Mm-hmm. We can do a joint venture.
Right.
To be able to sort of make a start in property. So there's lots of different strategies that can be used to be able to get in.
I think that should be got out there.
Absolutely.
I'm not aware of, you know, being a bit more collaborative or cooperative or whatever the word is. Because that appeals to me rather than some sort of some guy from London turning up and buying a street. Terraced houses.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get that. And sometimes that I do feel as though actually do I go a lot and say, well, actually quite a lot of my investors are from London because we've got, well, hang on a minute, we're lacking in housing stock as it is in Sheffield. But for me, I rent myself. I don't own my own home. And that's for because I get my money to work for me via property.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and that that actually, as I'm going around, because I move around quite a lot in Sheffield, I go to some places that they call that I can rent that. And to be quite honest, I wouldn't want to live there because it's of a really poor quality. But so that was one of the main reasons why I got into my own buy-to-let portfolio, is to be able to provide some good quality
accommodation. So are you upgrading?
Absolutely.
That? So yeah, so you go, say, man, I can think of places in Sheffield, you know, the stock is poor, but you could, with a little bit of, you know, sort of foresight, as it were, bring it up to spec and take all the positives.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that if I'm able to provide good quality homes for families, and that's the reason why I'm in this business, because I want to be able to provide some good quality rental long-term properties for families, that if I provide them a really lovely home, one, they're going to call it their home as opposed to just a roof over their head, that they will go along and look after my property, and in turn I always make sure that the, I don't know, something's gone wrong, I don't know, what can we have, I don't know, the boiler's broken down, you know, I will be getting somebody in there within 24 hours, hopefully certainly within 12 hours, to be able to go along and mend that, because I think that's really important, because if I look after my tenants will look after their home, because that's what it is, it's my house but it's their home.
But I mean, yeah,
that's brilliant.
That is, isn't it? Now I agree with you that Graham's done it much more succinctly. It's brilliant, because that's not the impression
exactly, and that's why I can be hesitant when I say that, you know, investors are coming to me to buy up in Sheffield, but my investors invest in me not only for my knowledge, but that's not necessarily just about finances and where to go along and find that. Actually, I go along and put a lot of my values. In actual fact, my values and ethics have to match the investors, because if they don't match with the investor, I don't work with them. Because I don't want them. I can't exclusively say I don't want them to invest in Sheffield. I don't want that type of person to be coming into Sheffield.
I think there's a mindset change. That's what I'm getting at. You know, things are going to have to change a bit.
Absolutely.
Or a lot. The other one was, as I was getting involved, is new builds and things like prefabricated houses. You know, things, and builders, you know, they've got to change.
Absolutely.
The way they do it.
Yes.
We were talking about, you know, we're in Kelham Island here. And it's kind of been gentrified.
Yes.
I think it's been overdone, personally. And there's these amazing buildings. We're sat amongst industrial buildings here that have got all manner of different uses. But they could be easily mixed.
Yes.
And so on. I think that's, yeah. But the council and the way they're approaching it, I feel they're right 10 years behind. You know, one wants mixed communities and things. Shared resources, all these sort of things. It all sounds very, you know, sort of grand, but actually, I think down at the heart of heart, people want to feel part of a community.
Absolutely.
And not stuck in some ghetto, or whatever you want to call it, I don't know. It's interesting. The Sheffield, I think, could lead the way in lots of ways, because there is a housing shortage, but I was looking at prefabricated houses idea, that you could build them in 3 months.
Yes.
And they cost about 25% of a bricks and mortar. I mean, they're timber framed houses. There's nothing wrong with timber framed houses.
No,
you go around the world and they've got 300 year old timber framed houses. It's just the perception as to whether it's bricks and mortar.
Absolutely.
And now the manufacturing processes, it's great. So coming back to Graham's a little bit, I'm going to your handcrafting furniture.
Yeah.
Now, part of this conversation is quite funny, really, because I'll lob in where this thing about the networking, but the Destination Depot network has become a very family sort of kind of get together bit. There's maybe a dozen of people turn up on a regular basis, but it kind of rotates, but it feels like, you know, you've kind of been like minded.
Yes.
And so when you walked in, you know, when we walked, I think we all walked in and you saw your table, which was what is that? You know, it's unusual, it's different. Is it when you look? You know, when I have a, my grandfather was a pharmacist, and he had chemical cabinets. You know, you know, with all the little brass labels on and stuff, and they're all mitered drawers and dovetailed joints, and they were a perfect piece of furniture, usually done in hardwoods, which would have been taken from South America or something. But if you take, you know, these things, would it be, is there a trend towards proper furniture, if that's the right word, or do you want to go the odd exotic sort of bizarre things?
No, I love tradition.
Right,
I've got a love of antique furniture.
Right,
furniture that's made correctly.
Yeah.
Not your flat packs and throwaway society, in it at the moment. But, no, I like things that last.
Can you recycle flat packs into making proper furniture?
Firewood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Keep people warm.
No, that's good. No.
I think that's about all I've got to say on that.
No, good. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people, you know, coming. Mm. You know, you go down to the tip on Saturday mornings, and people are heaving year-old furniture and just smashing it all up and all that stuff. Mm. What about what I'm getting at is recycling that wood. I mean, I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure what they do with how they recycle flat packs. What happens to that?
Well, it just gets ground down, doesn't it? And
does it? And then it's sort of reconstituted as MDF or something.
Yeah. Like, probably,
right. Yeah. Because I've sat on a table here, which has got a granite lookalike vinyl cover, vacuum packed onto MDF.
Yeah.
And most people think you've got a lump of granite. Yeah. You know, why would you do that anyway? But there's the perception. And then when we walked in and saw your table today, my first reaction was bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, this is but you said if you want to go down the traditional route, so would people come to you to commission?
One-off pieces. Yeah.
So that's, it doesn't have to be bizarre. Are you being creative, or are you being just, you know, bringing a joinery trade, which is as valuable as a piece of art, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's. You know, you make a baby's crib, and that'll get passed down. You know,
right.
When it's made correctly,
yeah,
and it stands the test of time, that'll be cherished and passed down. And I have done it in the past. I've made things like that. If it's made of wood, I'll do it. But I wouldn't make anything that I wouldn't have myself.
Okay.
If you know what I mean, obviously. That's very broad. What I'm really meaning is, if it's not made correctly, I'll not do it. If people want things making bespoke furniture, and they come up with a bizarre idea, if I can make it work, and know it's going to be structurally correct, I'll do it.
So you take on any ideas,
but I can't take every, because people they want the impossible sometimes, you know.
Well, tell me. So, do you call yourself a creative, or are you a craftsman?
I'm a creative craftsman.
A creative craftsman, maker. Right. So you're taking traditional ideas. Yeah.
I'm a musician by night and a wood magician by day.
Oh, there you go. Right there. Okay. A wood magician. Yeah. Actually, I had one of these. I'm going to sound really funny on these, because the ideas come to you and you just have to relax and things. You know these 1960s chairs?
Yeah.
Wooden chairs. Yeah. That I can't remember what they're called now. It's just on my head. And there's a guy, the craftsman, he calls him the furniture doctor.
Yeah.
And he restores furniture and old things. And I went in with an idea of the chair, which is a plain wooden chair.
Yeah.
And I said, I want Bauhaus. You know, let's paint it. So the black, red, and yellow type look, and I got inspired by watching how they were somebody being recycling furniture on television. One of those programs, it's called like Money Back or something, or Money for Nothing. Is that how it is? Something like that.
Yeah.
And they were taking these people chucking all this stuff away, and then, you know, say, well, we can get a but this is, and people do buy pieces of art, but they're still practical pieces of furniture, and they're not silly. But in my case, I asked for enamel paint on wood, which normally takes layers. You know, you're talking about layering your plastic, and you know, you put on layer after layer before you get the right finish, and then you polish it. So it's a real art and a craft. And he took that on board and applied his old skills to a new look. And I don't think he was convinced this was going to work until he had finished it. And then when I came in to pick them up, not only did he have them all covered up, and he was very proud of it, which is great, he also doubled the price because it took twice as long. But even so, it was new to him.
He enjoyed it.
Yeah. So do we all now look to enjoy what we do, and then for relax and make people, you know, bring up the good feeling of goodwill or whatever it is. Is that something like networking? I mean, are you going to come down here again?
I'll definitely come again, yeah. It's been an eye-opener, a real eye-opener. I enjoyed it, yeah.
Eye-opener.
I was very nervous. I'm a maker, not a talker, but...
Yeah, but you sit there, you sit and play your music. Do you hide behind the music, or do you...
Yeah,
it's
a different mask, what you put on. When you stand and you sing, it's a different...
So is it old style songs? What do you think? Folk? I don't know actually.
Any genre really, but
played in a blues band.
Yeah, blues is me.
All right.
It is me love like that.
What's the term about local songs? You know, where people are resurrecting. You know, like traditional hymns, traditional carols, all those sort of things. Is there such a thing in there?
I suppose there is, yeah. I don't go down that
route. You don't go that route?
No. That road, no.
Because I play jazz and stuff, but you get these, you know, like Sheffield born and bred songs, you know, or Yorkshire songs and these sort of things. I don't listen to lyrics, which is not very good on that. But does that interest you as a musician?
I love storytelling songs, you know?
Yeah.
Ballads, storytelling songs. But blues.
Blues?
Blues
can
music.
Can we get Sheffield blues?
I suppose you should be able to, with tradition that still works and camaraderie that brought...
Yeah,
I would imagine. Yeah, there's room for that. I can't say I've ever heard people that really go out with that setting in mind, like. But, yeah,
it could do. I mean, I don't know. Are you into music?
Absolutely.
Are you?
Go massively.
Go on, you tell. This is going to be fun.
I could say that my range is Coldplay all the way up to whether anybody's heard a German band called Rammstein.
I've heard.
Yeah? Well, look on your face, you've not heard of...
No.
No?
What do you call it?
Rammstein. It's a German...
Rammstein.
German band. So there's a huge difference between those two bands and sort of all the bits in between. My husband and I spend a phenomenal amount of money going to concerts. Ideally, we want to be going to at least two a month.
Seriously?
Mm.
All right.
Yeah.
You're not one of these people that say, I saw U2 in 1995 or something, and then I've got to go and see them again.
Are some bands that we've seen three, four times.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not excessive, but I mean, people who go to every gig on a tour. Things like that, they literally see the same.
One of my husband's and I's ambitions is let's go with U2. That when they tour and they're doing a world tour, that we will follow them all the way around. They've got so much music. Every night's a different night. You've got a different crowd there, different atmosphere. So ultimately, that's what we'd like to be able to do.
Mm. There you go. Mm. Right, but you don't play yourself?
Yeah. No.
No?
No. And that's why, you know, Graham, you're saying that, you know, you find it difficult to stand up and talk. I personally don't find that too difficult. But if you ask me to stand up and go along and sing. Yeah. I'll be running in the complete and utter opposite direction.
Completely opposite. I could get up and sing in front of 200 people and I went, my knees were knocking, talking to 10 people in there.
Yeah.
Strange.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Right, anyway, that's great. I think, I mean, we've already done, I said 15 minutes, it's 25 minutes already. So so brilliant, excellent. I'll shut it off and this is how I always finish it. Right, here it goes.